Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon and happy Tuesday and happy International Women's Day, Elizabeth.
Ah, thank you, Hank, and happy Women's History Month.
Wow.
I know, it's a big
month for women.
It's a big month for women. It should be like that all the time, but, you know, I'll take a month, I'll take a day and take some time to recognize the accomplishments of those around us. You know, and I think it's important that we recognize anyone who's had an impact on our life. And I think that was kind of the inspiration for today's show, aside from the fact that it's International Women's Day. You know that this date has been around for over 100 years. It has a long history. It did not start in the United States. We didn't actually start. We didn't really recognize International Women's Days until the 1970s. I think 1977 was the first time that it was recognized in the United States. And then kind of grew the idea of honoring generations of women to moving out into an entire month of celebration of what women were doing. But so I definitely felt like we needed to spend some time talking about the accomplishments of women in our lives, women in history, women that we admire and respect. And also I wanted to talk about, again, all the people that have influenced our lives in important ways. A couple things have happened. First, I have to say that the thing I should not do before every show is read letters from listeners, because then my brain starts going down the path of the letters from the listeners. But I really appreciate those of you who take the time to send me notes or send me feedback and share your thoughts about shows and things you've heard. It's wonderful to know that you're out there because we are a community, and I am part of this community, and I appreciate learning from you and your perspectives. But once I started reading those letters, all of a sudden my mind started going in a million different directions of things I wanted to address. So I'm going to have to table them, put them aside for future shows, because I really want to be able to devote enough time today to talking about and making time to talk about influential women. But before I jump into that piece, I want to talk about a memorial service that I went to this weekend. It was a memorial service, a tribute for my favorite teacher, one of my favorite teachers. I had two teachers in my life that really influenced and impacted my life in profound ways. And it's interesting, the first teacher passed away a few years ago. He was my sixth grade teacher, Mr. Cherry. And Mr. Cherry, and I don't know if it was in a conference or at some point, told my mother that if we couldn't find some sort of career that paid Elizabeth to talk, he wasn't quite sure that I would be suited to do much else. So I loved talking to Mr. Cherry over my lifetime in the different radio jobs that I had, and reminding him that besides being a teacher and a therapist and doing radio, I'd found pretty much all of the professions that required me to get paid to talk. So that was Mr. Cherry's contribution. But my other teacher, Nick Ferrantinos, was my journalism teacher. And I never had any intention of being a journalist or going into journalism. I actually had a crush on one of the guys that was on the journalism staff. And so I started hanging around the journalism office. And it was fascinating. And this teacher was there who was kind of hard on all the students and expected perfection. And I ended up having him for an American Lit class. And so in this American Lit class, he started handing me back papers with just more red marks on them than you can imagine, and basically saying to me, you know, you're better than this. You can do better than this. Why don't you use your brain? Why aren't you investing yourself in your education? Because he knew me, you know, from the American Lit class, but he also knew me as the girl hanging around the journalism office with the boys that I had a crush on. And so I ended up going into journalism in the next year, my junior and senior years. And Nick proceeded to spend the next 2 years doing the same thing. Just everything I turned in that he didn't feel like had any effort or not enough effort, he would he would push back on me. And it was always with the same comments. Why don't you respect yourself more as a woman? Why don't you expect more from yourself? You are more than just the boys you have crushes on. And at the time, it was really hard to take in because I felt so misunderstood and didn't even know. You know, I really wanted these boys to like me back, and I didn't take myself seriously as a student, or, you know, I didn't really see myself having a career of any kind. I just was being a girl in the 1970s. Right at the feminist movement time, I clearly had not had any awakening at that point. But I tell this story for three reasons. One, because it's Women's History Month and International Women's Day, and this teacher, Nick Ferrantino, spent 40 years of his life devoted to enhancing and improving the lives of his students. Many of them were women. Many of the editors-in-chief of his newspaper that he guided for 20-something years at my high school, many of the editor-in-chiefs were women at a time where girls weren't getting recognized in high schools, where it was still very male-dominated, any of the positions of leadership. But here was someone who recognized the talent of women. He was devoted to his wife and devoted to his mother, and he saw in women strength, and so he pushed us and propelled us and encouraged us. And to be at this memorial service on Saturday was quite something, because I felt I'd had this really unique experience with Nick throughout my adult life, because after high school we'd stayed close, and he kept pushing me. Why aren't you pushing yourself with the radio? Why aren't you writing more? why aren't you spreading your life out a little more? Do more with yourself in super encouraging ways. And he also was my biggest fan as a wife and a mom, and encouraged me to do my best with my children and to rise above struggles. And so I went to the memorial service feeling like I really was going to have something unique to say at this tribute. And what I found out was there were hundreds of us there who'd had similar experiences with Nick and couldn't wait to get up and talk about how his nurturing, his guidance, his love had influenced and inspired their lives in profound ways. There are women who'd gone on to become ministers and written books and won, national awards, and it's incredible. And we all had that same experience. But here was someone who saw the best in us and expected more from us and would not just write off our potential as being they're just girls or they're just young women. So in this month of honoring women's history, I want to honor this man who was in the forefront of pushing women forward and encouraging them. So Nick Ferrantinos, I carry on your legacy and your story through my work and the work that I do, inspiring, I hope, and nurturing and guiding other young women to expect more from themselves. So it was a big weekend. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I don't know why I'm getting choked up. I thought I'd cried it out on Saturday. We do meet every Tuesday to talk about those issues that are most important to us. And as always, I encourage you to be part of this conversation today. Our number is 805-781-3875. We're going to talk about women in history and the impact women have had in our lives. And again, unless you take a women's history class or a women in gender studies class, we don't spend a lot of time talking about women who have influenced the course of history. We talk about Sacagawea and Lucretia Mott, who is an early abolitionist, worked for women's rights, if you didn't know. We talk about Harriet Beecher Stowe and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony. I think all those names might be familiar, Harriet Tubman. And if they're not, then you really need to start doing some primer work, because these are some of the basic women throughout history, Clara Barton and Louisa May Alcott. Mother Jones, one of my favorite women, who was a labor organizer and was considered one of the most dangerous women in America by the U.S. Congress in the early 1900s, because she was so influential in organizing labor struggles. Carrie Nation, Annie Oakley, Grandma Moses, Nellie Bly, who was a social justice investigative journalist, also at the turn of the century. And she she trailblazed and went undercover doing work, helping to advance the causes of poor and marginalized people. But there's a lot of people besides, you know, Margaret Sanger and Helen Keller that we don't hear about. Let me see. Well, Amelia Earhart. But we don't talk a lot about Margaret Chase Smith, who was the first congresswoman reelected four times as a senator from 1949 to 1973. And again, we don't have a lot of representation still. We don't have equality in representation in government, but we also overlook the women who have had an influence in politics over time. We probably don't talk a lot about Grace Hopper, who is a PhD from Yale, and she was a rear admiral. She also is one of the earliest computer programmers and was a leader in software development concepts. So we don't talk a lot about the unsung heroes of our early our latest technologies. So I'm trying to stir you up a little bit to start thinking about some women who have influenced your lives and maybe some historical figures that have inspired you. You know, that have encouraged you to go out and do good things. Maybe you're encouraged by Rosa Parks and her work for civil rights. Maybe you didn't even know that you were encouraged by the work of Daisy Gatson Bates, who also was a civil rights activist and journalist. She led the fight to integrate Little Rock, Arkansas schools. You might know about Ella Fitzgerald, but you might not know about Betty Friedan, who wrote The Feminine Mystique, which is considered one of the seminal pieces of the early, the second feminist wave. So who are some of those people that have encouraged you? And I also think about you know, the women in my own life. And if you are a friend on Facebook, or if you've liked the Reluctant Therapist Facebook page, you can see I switched up my photos today. And I put a picture of my grandmother and her sisters and her mother that was taken, I don't know when that was, maybe in the early 60s. But I feel like I come from a very strong line of very strong women who didn't have the same opportunities I did. My grandmother was a state champion golfer. She was a phenomenal musician, could play multiple instruments. She was a wonderful conversationalist, but she also had little access to anything beyond being an amateur at most of the things that she enjoyed, and spent a lot of time focused on being a wife and mother. But I think she spent a lot of time being frustrated that she didn't get to pursue a lot of the gifts and talents that she had that I see now emerging in my daughter, who's 19. I see a lot of my grandmother's energy in her. And I think a lot about her mom, who was also a musician, a piano player, who played the piano for men returning home from World War I and was kind of instrumental in the early music therapy movement, which wasn't really a thing at the time, but she was playing the piano for the soldiers that were returning with shell-shocked and seeing a lot of improvement in their lives. So I think about the women just in the generations that I have descended from and the amazing things that they were accomplished with the limited opportunities that they had. My other grandmother, my mom's mother, went to work during World War II because my grandfather was had to go to war. And so my grandmother ended up being a buyer for a department store and going into New York City at a time that women weren't going into New York City alone, and they definitely weren't buyers at department stores. And she ended up having a wonderful career doing this and still raising four children and holding down the fort, because that's what we do as women, right? We do these amazing things out in the world, and we also are the primary caregivers still for children and primary caregivers for the elderly in our families. So the work of women is multifaceted and doesn't get enough notice, because I think we're so busy doing the work that no one takes the time to sit down and write the book. Or maybe we overlook the importance. And I also, you know, again, look at my own mother, who has an incredible array of talents in all sorts of different areas, from athletics to writing to humor, you know, to her vocabulary is incredible. My mom reads everything. And she also was a mom right at the time where women weren't encouraged to go to college or to play sports or, you know, to pursue careers. And she could have done any of them well. And instead, she did family life very well and also managed to hold down jobs and support my, you know, father's efforts and and kind of be there for all of us. But I just know and I sense for my mother, my grandmothers, my great grandmothers, that sense of a little bit of unfinished business, right? That there were things that they wanted to pursue or to develop and never really had that opportunity. And so I feel like it's our job in this generation to make sure that we encourage the generation coming up after us or the generations coming up after us to teach them about the fights and the struggles of the women that came before them, to not take for granted all of the changes that have been made in the last 100+ years. Because if we fail to talk about what's happened in the last 100 years, how many benefits or changes have happened socially, politically, economically, we are on the verge of seeing so many of these hard-fought rights and opportunities be stripped away. Politically, over 700 laws have been proposed aimed at limiting women's reproductive health, and that's just in the last 10 years. So where do you want to go with this? Who are the women that have inspired you? Who are some of the historical figures that might have inspired you? Where are you today on International Women's Day? Will you be gathering in a circle of women? I know that there's a gathering happening in San Luis Obispo tonight at Embody at 6 p.m. to celebrate the new moon and also to sit in circle in unison with thousands of circles that are happening all over the world today in honor of International Women's Day. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation today. 805-781-3875. I am Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And I'd love to hear from you on this idea. Where are you in the world of women? Who inspires you? The other thing that's happening today, and I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about it, but I think it's important because it's Women's History Month and there are a lot of women behind the scenes and in front of the scenes in all parts of our life that are important to us. And I want to talk about Jordan, who has been the producer of my show for the last, has it been 2 years, Jordan? Or is it just, it seems like.
It's been about nearly 2 years.
I know. And today is our last day together.
Yes, it is.
And I'm sad about that also, because I've enjoyed spending the last 2 years seeing you across the glass from me.
As have I.
And I know that you have a lot of dreams and a lot of places to go, and you're young and full of energy. And so I'm curious, who has inspired you to be who you are today?
It's quite a question.
I know. I like to start with the small ones.
I think it's, for me, the first thought is I have three sisters, and being raised and growing up around them has been incredibly formative. And I think that initially in my life, I didn't have too much competing thoughts about girls versus boys or anything like that, the patriarchy, because I have a very encouraging father who's a big advocate for women. And so my sisters, all being incredibly different people, have chosen different paths, has, I think, at least strengthened my perspective about women and what how women should encourage each other, and have I guess, been hugely influential in my life.
And so I'm going to let you think on that, because I think there are family members who influence us. And hopefully we have encouragement at home. But also, who are those historical figures? Because I know as a journalist and working in the world of radio, that there have been people that have inspired your work and inspired you as you move forward. And of course, now with our phone ringing, you have to jump off and start answering phones. But I want you to think about that, Jordan. Like, who are some of the women that you grew up knowing about? And because I'm curious also how women's history has been taught between my generation and your generation, because again, aside from Harriet Tubman and Louisa May Alcott and the very obvious women of history, we didn't talk a lot about, when I was going to school, women of any, we talked about Eleanor Roosevelt and her contributions, but not really, we never had a book that was devoted to understanding women's contributions. And so I think we tend to think about women's contributions when it comes to writing, when it comes to entertainment, maybe through athletics. We talk about women, but we really don't pay a lot of attention to the women who have done great things in the worlds of political activism or social activism or, you know, in the worlds of biochemistry, like Marie Maynard Daly. She was the first African-American woman to earn a PhD in chemistry in 1948. We don't talk about women who made their mark in areas like just historically. Barbara Tuchman was a two-time winner of the Pulitzer Prize. So who are those people that have influenced you? Who are those women that have made a difference in your life? And why do you think it's important to have a month devoted to women's history? Or do you think it's important to have a month devoted to women's history? Or even in Women's International Women's Day? 805-781-3875. Hi, Judith, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Well, I was really inspired in the early 70s by Maggie Kuhn, who was the founder of a group called the Gray Panthers.
Oh.
And she inspired me to go into the field of gerontology. My first job out of graduate school was with an area agency on aging. And there, Maggie really spoke out about things that the older generation was facing, particularly women who often were struggling with less social security than men because they'd taken time out to raise families, and who still faced older women who needed to work, faced age discrimination, and there were housing issues. And Maggie organized a really effective lobby group. It lasted 20 or 30 years. But she lived in Philadelphia, and she was one of the most outspoken people I've ever heard. She was just charming.
And what was her last name?
I think it's K-U-H-N, Maggie Kuhn, founder of the Gray, not the Black, but the Gray Panthers.
And so did you carry on her legacy now? Have you continued working on behalf of the older generation or in the gerontology field?
Well, at the time I was inspired by her, I was about 30, and I had a T-shirt that said on it, Future Senior Citizen. I always used to laugh about that. Now I'm 73, and it's not so funny. It's here. And, yes, I'm on an advisory committee to the Area Agency on Aging that serves our county and Santa Barbara County.
Fantastic. Thank you, Judith.
Okay, you're welcome. Great program.
Enjoy your day. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Jackie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I was just calling because I was thinking about a woman who I read a lot about when I was pregnant, Ina May Gaskin, who is pretty much one of the modern women who promoted midwifery around the world. And I read her book, Ina May's Guide to Childbirth, and it really was inspiring as a young woman who was pretty scared of childbirth and spent a lot of my pregnancy being anxious about it. And her advocacy for midwifery and for women to give birth. I can hear my daughter, who's now here. But it really was one of the women who kind of, I could hear the encouragement when I was going through some of the darker parts of child labor. So Ina May Gaskin was someone who I really am inspired by.
So Ina, I-N-A?
Ina May Gaskin, yeah, I-N-A.
And so when do you think this book was written, or do you know when the book was written?
She wrote a couple books. I think the second one was published recently, but she became famous because she created a farm. It sounds a little silly, but a farm commune for women to give birth with their families around out of a hospital in a more relaxed, natural setting in a time when birth was becoming very medicalized in the 60s and 70s. And so she really brought midwifery to the map and went around the world after the years at the commune promoting midwifery and encouraging women to go into the profession of midwifery without a nursing background. So women now are able to go into midwifery school directly and become midwives without the years of medical training. So they have a separate training just for midwives, and it's really brought it into the mainstream more than it had been.
And making the naturalness of childbirth just what it is, natural, right? That you have someone guiding you through the process, but it doesn't need to be a medical event.
Not always, no.
All right. Thank you so much, Jackie, for calling in. Ina May Gaskin. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Yes, it's so fun to hear names of people, isn't it, Jordan, that I haven't heard before? And I also, Jackie said it sounded silly about having a farm where you would go, you know, give birth with your, I think that sounds like the greatest alternative ever. What could be more beautiful and relaxing to go to this comforting, almost like spa-like place with your family and you go through this beautiful process of giving birth? I think we need to have another show about childbirth and the alternatives. 805-781-3875. We're talking about Women's History Month and the women who have inspired or impacted your life. And today is actually International Women's Day. We take the time, and we should take the time to recognize the complex issues of helping women find equality around the world, where in most countries or many countries aside from around many countries outside of the United States have very strict laws that oppress women and give them no access to individuality or rights or decision making, and that it's very dangerous for a lot of women activists around the world to speak out, to try to control their reproductive rights. And we have a huge problem with human trafficking and sex trafficking of women, not just around the world, but in our own country and in our own county. And so when we talk about Women's History Month and the impact of women who have changed the course of history, it's also important to recognize the challenges that still are out there for women in the world, and how it's not just about finding economic equality, although that's incredibly important, but we are still fighting for basic human rights for many women around the world who, you know, are at risk physically if they try to step out or speak for themselves. 805-781-3875. Charlie, let's hear it from the men. What's your take on this?
Okay, I want to talk about a lady pediatrician from my med school days, Dr. Marini Olney. Among the she really revolutionized diabetic care. She was the one that founded a diabetic in the Southern California. A diabetic southern camp for children with diabetes. We're talking about the probably 40s and 50s.
And so it was probably challenging for her even to go to med school at that time, right?
No, this was, you know, I actually, when I was as a pre-med, one of my pre-med days, one of the guys I met at college had been a counselor at the diabetic summer camp. And how they really got kids out exercising, kind of pried them away from their parents, made them independent, got them on exercise, diet, because you know back in the day, you know, somebody, a kid with diabetes would not be able to go to any summer camp.
So she changed or revolutionized the way that we perceived and treated juvenile diabetes then.
Right.
Fantastic. Thank you, Charlie.
Yeah. Anyway, it's somebody that's maybe well known to you know.
And I appreciate Charlie's take on that. He always has the good medical references because he has such a long and fruitful career in the medical world. And also, you know, I was reading about Elizabeth Blackwell, who was the first woman physician in the United States. She got her MD from Geneva College, and then she went on to open infirmaries and trained women in the field of medicine. So, you know, again, someone that we don't often hear about. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation today. We're talking about Women's History Month. And, you know, those people that most influenced us or had an impact on our life or who inspire us to go out and do good things or to change the world or to knock down doors. 805-781-3875. Hi, Jeremy. You're on the air.
Hi. I first wanted to say that as far as the suffragist movement and who inspired them,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you've ever heard that that suffragist movement came out of upstate New York.
Yes.
And
Seneca
all the
Falls.
Finger Lake Native American tribes up there were matriarchal.
Oh, okay.
So they were inspired by the Native American matriarchal tribes themselves.
Now, that's interesting because I know quite a bit about the suffragist movement and Seneca Falls and the women's rights conventions, but I've never heard that connection before. So I love being educated. How did you find this information?
NPR.
Well, thank you for being a devoted listener.
Sure. My biggest, earliest influence was my grandmother, who was an activist and feminist, and has been the reason I'd always considered myself a feminist. But I have to say that I have been recently influenced by you, the reluctant therapist.
Oh, Jeremy, thank you.
And I do not remember the guest name, and I apologize, but you did a show, and all my life I'd been running around saying, restore the matriarchy, restore the matriarchy. It's the only way. And now I believe that balance is the only way. So I've been very influenced by you and your show.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks for taking the time to call.
Thank you.
I feel inspired. And it is about balance. And it's funny because I was tossing back and forth today whether or not to just do a show about Women's History Month and to really bring up the names of women historical figures that we might not know about and maybe inspire people to look a little further and to study a little more and to share with their children, their daughters, the names of some of these influential women. But then I thought maybe we should do the whole show about the feminist movements and the different waves of feminism and the importance of this fourth wave that we're entering into, which is about balance, which is about men being very involved in the balancing of gender opportunities and, you know, men saying, I want to be able to embrace my feminist and my feminism side. I want to be able to raise and nurture children and care for others. You know, the earth is screaming for this feminine energy to reemerge in more balanced ways because it's the feminine energy, right, that cares for the earth, that cares for others. It is the feminine energy in us that nurtures. And it's not just women that carry this feminine energy. It is men who carry it as well. But we've spent a long time being so focused on those masculine traits of doing and working and being and creating, which are powerful and important. But we have diminished or ignored or thrown aside the virtues of those feminine qualities of caring for, nurturing, the emotion work, holding feelings, holding space for hearing stories. And so I went back and forth about which way to go with the show today. And I'm glad that we're able to maybe balance and talk about both of those important pieces of women's history, but also the feminine energy attached to women, but also attached to the experience of men. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can join the program by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, on our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can subscribe to iTunes and podcast our shows and get them on your device and listen to them anytime. If you just go to iTunes, look up The Reluctant Therapist under podcast and hit subscribe and they'll download to your device. And you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org to stay involved in what's going on in the air. 805-781-3875. Hi, Iris. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to mention that a book that really influenced me was called The Woman's Room. Women's Room.
I remember that book. Yes.
And I grew up in the 60s and came of age during the women's movement. So I was kind of besieged with all that and thought I was a feminist at 16 years old. But I didn't really understand what they were talking about. And so when I read The Women's Room, it was a big shock because my mother seemed so satisfied with her role as, you know, being a stay-at-home mom. But the women's room was just this stark contrast to the frustrations that a lot of educated or women that wanted more couldn't have during the 50s. And the lack of choice that there was in the 50s. And so then I really understood what the women's movement was all about. And it's a book that I wish that young women would read today because I don't think they really understand what it's all about and where it's going. And I think they've lost their way in some respects.
Well, and it's interesting, Iris, because I do a whole lecture on feminism in each quarter. And I start off the lecture by saying, how many would you consider yourself feminist? And so few of the girls raise their hand. And I say, it's my goal to get more hands by the end of this lecture because they don't understand the historical context. They haven't been, you know, told what was fought for, and they aren't really aware of all of the rights that they're losing. I think they're incredibly unaware and naive about the reproductive rights assault.
Yes.
So I think it's our job. I mean, I
agree. And I have to just say one thing that I really am fearful for the young girls today in the culture of dating, where there is no culture of dating. And I really think that young girls are the ones that are, young women are the ones that are going to be hurt by the culture of hookup. I think it's very harmful to their psyche. So I just wanted to state that.
No, thank you, Iris. And I think it's a hard conversation because I try to talk about that also, is that a lot of the research Helen Fisher's done and a lot of researchers looking at relationships, you know, have found that sex is not a benign experience, right? That the act brings up a lot of different emotions and there are chemicals that are released. And so they're just even on a biological basis, there's a lot of consequences. And it's a hard conversation because we want young women to feel free and embrace their bodies and feel good about themselves. But there is this social context of how do we then navigate relationships or, you know, self-esteem. So I think that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
And we do need to have, you know, one of my things today that I really wanted to emphasize was that the only way women's history gets passed along is if we as women share the history orally with the young women around us, that we gather in circles and we bring women together and we pass the stories along, you know, because the women's room is funny. I read it also, and I was probably a little younger in high school, and it was so over my head and so overwhelming. But it stuck with me all these years, and I don't know what the equivalent of that is for young women today.
Yeah, that's very true. It just seems that there isn't this awareness of, you know, men and women aren't the same, and even though we have the same rights and all of that, it could be the wrong decision health wise and psychology wise, and I think the impact on our culture is just terrible with this, with electronic dating, and harmful to. I think it's going to have a huge impact on our culture in general. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I think it's going to be a great conversation to have in the future because, thank you, Iris. It is the wave. I don't know about you, Jordan, because you're young, about the electronic dating or online dating, because it's the primary way that young people and a lot of people are meeting each other is online, and then apps like Tinder and. That, you know, my students talk quite a bit about meeting each other that way. So I think the problem, the struggle is that the ability to research on the effects of the different dating norms is way behind the norms because things change so quickly in the world of technology that our research is, you know, we're just getting research about chat rooms, and chat rooms ended 5 years ago. So that's one of the challenges we have. 805-781-3875. Is it Russell? Russie?
Russie.
Hi. Uh-huh. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
I'd like to say something about Margaret Guyton. She was a teacher at Arroyo Grande Elementary School,
mm-hmm.
and she taught fourth graders who weren't able to do the work or weren't able to blend into the rest of the classes, kind of a remedial class or something like that. And she would talk to us and nurture us and kind of get us started on how to do schoolwork and help us deal with our social skills and that kind of stuff. And she took me under her wings, you know, and gave me work, you know, at her houses and just nurtured me all through school. That gave me a start where coming from a farm, there was no time for anything but farming, right? And so the boys that she was teaching and girls didn't have any knowledge of math or English or any of those things. And such a wonderful woman she was. Just wanted to give a heads up for her.
And what was her name again?
Margaret Guyton.
And isn't it wonderful because clearly she's had an influence on your life for many, many years.
All my life, and I have thought of her all my life.
Oh, Russie, thank you so much for taking the time to call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I appreciate that also because, again, the impact of my teachers, Mr. Cherry and Nick Ferrantino's had on me. I notice I can't say Bill Cherry. I still have to call him Mr. Cherry all these years later. And there were women teachers I had that were incredibly powerful, but But I think we all have someone who really stuck with us and helped at times in our life when they might not even know that they were helping. And what a great thing to aspire for. Now, we're talking about Women's History Month, and particularly today because it's International Women's Day. The first one was recognized in 1909, and it was more of a international event than something that was founded in the United States. Actually, it was first observed in the United States in 1977 when the United Nations General Assembly invited its members to make March 8th National United Nations Day for Women's Rights and World Peace. And the theme this year, the 2016 theme for International Women's Day is Planet 50-50 by 2030, Step It Up for Gender Equality. So the whole theme for this year really kind of goes along with this fourth wave of feminism idea we've been kind of batting around over the last few months or last year about how do we bring men and women together to embrace that feminine energy that's so needed to help protect the earth and protect each other, protect children, protect the elderly. You know, there's such great need in all of those areas. So we're talking about that today. How do we honor women's contribution to our lives and to the world? And who are some women that have influenced your life in positive ways? 805-781-3875. Hi, Liz. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, yes, I wanted to mention someone who hasn't been mentioned in women's history.
Okay.
And that's Jane Addams. Jane Addams was the co-founder of Hull House, one of the first settlement houses, and it was in Chicago. She was also one of the founders in 1915 of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. These were women who came from all over the world, some of them crossing borders of countries that were at war with each other in the First World War. And then they met in The Hague, and they formed the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, which is still in existence. And she did get the Nobel Peace Prize. She co-founded Hull House in Chicago, which was one of the first settlement houses. Now, how this is personal to me is my grandmother, who was an immigrant, got her political start in Hull House in Chicago. And my great-grandmother got her start. And when my grandmother also got it from her political ambitions and work from her, and I never met my grandmother or my great-grandmother, especially my grandmother, because she died before I was born. But my mother continued with that political activity. And after my father was in the First World War. And after the war, the veterans had been promised a bonus from fighting in the First World War, and it wasn't given to them. And they had a tent city in Washington, D.C. My father was there. They were trying to demand their bonus that was promised to them. And my mother was working there, and that's how they met and remained political for their entire lives, passed it on to me, and I've passed it on to my children. And I'm a member of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. It's still in existence. And also a member of the Mothers for Peace. And one of the things that we do is every year we donate a set of six books for children to the children's library. They're called the Jane Addams Peace Award books, and they have to do with social justice, women's issues, children's issues, peace, and we donate them to the children's library at the City County Library.
And Liz, also Mothers for Peace gives out scholarships each year, right?
We do. If you are interested, you can go to our website, mothersforpeace.org. We give a $750 scholarship yearly to a high school senior and a $1,500 scholarship to the college junior or senior. Now, if you go to our website, you can find information about the scholarships and what's required. And let us know if you've just gotten the information now, because we can extend the deadline date.
Fantastic.
As I'm the chair of that committee, I can extend the deadline date if you just go there now to see about scholarships. You may not have enough time to get it in on the deadline.
Well, I'll have people follow up with that if they do have someone who qualifies. And I have to tell you, Liz, that my oldest daughter, Kirsten, was a recipient of one of your Mothers for Peace scholarships 10 years ago. So,
wonderful.
We appreciate the work you do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in and telling us about Jane Adam. And that was someone on my list, so I'm glad that you brought her up. One of the other people that I wanted to mention was Lillian Smith, because we talk a lot about Rosa Parks and the work that she did. But Lillian Smith was honored in 1956 by the women who organized the Montgomery bus boycott, because Smith was one of the nation's strongest European-American voices to expose the vicious ways that racism destroys the human spirit. And she did this through a lot of her writing, and she co-published a literary magazine called South Today to help give voice to progressive black and white writers. I mean, there are women who have been doing wonderful things and continue to do wonderful things, and we have to share those stories. We have to connect each other, and we have to pass this information along to the next generation, because it's not enough to reap the benefits of the hard work of the women who've come before us. I think that we all have a responsibility to nurture and inspire the generations of women who follow us. We have a responsibility, because if we don't pay attention, if we don't use vigilance, we will continue to see rights and opportunities and barriers that were broken down start to go up again. And I know that we're seeing it happen, and it's quietly, you know, eking back into our lives, the laws that are being written, the access to reproductive health. You know, we're seeing these things be stripped away, but the difficulty in being active is that our lives are so inherently busy. What we load on young women, what we load on young people in general, just to keep up academically, doesn't leave a lot of space to be active, right? To be aware of what's going on politically and culturally around them. And I think that's a shame. I think part of raising young people is to helping them become whole citizens and understanding their responsibility to be socially active, politically active, economically active. And I think we're missing a huge part of our education by not spending time sharing this information with young people. 805-781-3875. Hi, Lionel. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Listen, I would just like to give a shout-out, well, of course, to all the women in my life. I'm a father, a grandfather, a great-grandfather, and all the girls in my life have been really wonderful people and nurturing, intelligent, kind, creative people. More to the point here locally, I would like to, well, I was going to honor Mothers for Peace, but you talked about that. Michael Moore's movie at the Palm Theater called Where Should We Invade Next has a wonderful segment on the banking system in Iceland, which, interestingly enough, the only bank in Iceland that didn't melt down in 2008 was the Women's Bank. And, of course, they interviewed three of the women that are on the board of directors, and they say, well, we never did believe in this high-flying investment strategy that was so prevalent at the time. And we thought, you know, you get a bunch of men in a room competing with each other, a bunch of testosterone to see who can take the greatest risk, and without a lot of common sense. And they also said that now it's 50% of the board of directors of the corporations in Iceland must be women. You have to have a balanced board of directors. And their parliament is 50-50 also. And because, as they said, well, men being how they are, if you have one or two women in the boardroom, there's several men, they'll shout down the women or ignore them, but when you reach 50%, then everybody gets their say. And when everybody gets their say, then democracy works, because that's how it's supposed to be. So I would encourage people to go down and see the poem, or see Michael Moore's new movie, because it has a wonderful segment on women in the banking industry.
And again, I appreciate you bringing that up, Lionel. One, because I do want to go see the movie. And two, because we're talking about, you know, the theme of International Women's Day this year is, you know, gender equality by 2030. And really, you know, having this goal of making this planet 50-50, gender equality for all. Because, you know, if we just stay focused in our own community or our own neighborhoods or our own state, which are wonderful because I believe heartily in localism and local work, but we also have to have our eyes opened wide to what's going on in the greater you know, world and what's going on outside of our state and different parts of our country, but also outside of our borders, to be aware that gender equality, raising the status of women, is not only beneficial for women, but it's beneficial for the well-being of everyone on the planet. There's a group started by Rian Eisler, who wrote Chalice and the Blade, and we interviewed her last year. Her group is called caringeconomy.org, and she's working very hard to raise the status of caregivers in society. Most of the caregiving work in our culture is done by women, 3/4 of it, and to raise the status of this work will also raise the quality of life for women and therefore for children. And so that's another area that you might want to look into, caringeconomy.org. Gwil, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just have something brief to add to some comments. A little while ago, a gentleman was talking about matriarchal Native American societies and the influence and the contributions of women within those cultures. And I want to suggest a book by an historian and anthropologist from McAllister College in Canada, Minnesota. His name is Jack Weatherford, and he wrote a book back in the late 80s, but it's still very timely, called Indian Givers. And it's a general book about North, South, and Central American Native Americans that, within their cultures, the things that they have contributed to the whole world, food, blah, 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 blah. And there's a great chapter in there on women.
Thank you. And how did that inspire you? When did you read the book?
I read the book pretty recently, actually. It's an older book. He's a terrific historian, and he's just retired, and he lives most of his life now in Mongolia, and his best book was one about Genghis Khan, and it was kind of written along the same lines about the contributions of him within his society. But in terms of women, my mom and my grandmothers were very important people in my life, and more importantly, as a teacher, I was constantly around in a very often a women's world. That's one of the places where you have some equality as far as women and men together in expectations, et cetera, and in leadership. And there were just the best bosses I ever had were women, the best principals, the best administrators, the best counselors, definitely the best counselors. And so it was very kind of a mundane experience that is just precious.
Thank you, Gwil. Thank you for stating it so well. You know, it is, when will we have the conversations about just great people in general, not having to define it by gender, but we still need to do we still have to have the conversations about the contributions of women. We have time for a couple more thoughts. Marianne, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello, Elizabeth. Thank you for the topic and happy Women's Day.
Thank you. Same to you.
When you and the other callers were talking about teachers, I remembered my junior high school teacher, a female, and her name was Harris or Harrison, her last name. And her husband was a teacher also, but we actually had a test at one time, and the test question was going to be right or wrong. And the question was, what is your most valuable asset? And the correct answer was your uniqueness. Mm. And so many times I think the world and media and what have you tries to squelch that out of us. And to this day, I'm a mother and a grandmother now. And you know what? Today, it's still our uniqueness. And I was thinking, as the matriarchal Ben were talking, perhaps we need a new T-shirt campaign called Matriarchs for Hillary 2016. How about that?
I love it. Thank you, Marianne.
Thanks again.
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And Linda, you get the last thoughts today. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm just calling in because I retired from the phone company several years ago, And I was fortunate enough to have some women break the path to get into technical jobs in the frame and test boards and the physical jobs that were mostly, and the most more high-paying jobs that were mostly given to men. And so I'm very grateful for to all of those women who went before me in that field. And also, you're right about the human, our rights over our bodies, because as a child, I can remember hearing my mother's friends talking about doing some backstreet work, and then I had a friend who almost died because she couldn't go to her mother to tell her she was pregnant, and she, you know, terminated it and almost died because of it. And I think that's going to happen to more of our young women if we don't stand up to our rights over our bodies.
Absolutely, Linda. Thank you. And I think this is a good place to wrap things up, because I believe there's another show in the making about the pressure on women today with the loss of reproductive access to reproductive health, to the assault on the Roe v. Wade, on the emergence of more conversations about do-it-yourself abortions and the returning to back alley abortions when we don't have access to proper health care. And so that might be a conversation that we'll be having soon, as we see things really heating up in our culture and changing around the country. Access is an issue, and it's not going to change unless we as women who were active once before get active again. I appreciate you taking the time to listen today. This conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Previous shows are available at kcbx.org, as well as on our webpage. You can also podcast our shows at iTunes. And as always, I encourage you to keep the conversation going. I look forward to speaking to you again next Tuesday. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX. We go out today with some music from Peter Gabriel.
Shaking the tree.